is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the first question millions of Americans are asking themselves and their families today is this plausible? We're speaking about that a national election was stolen, that widespread fraud is in play, and can it be proven in court without a doubt? And will the Supreme Court defend this election and the future of the Republic? There are a lot of other questions as well, like how many key people are involved in this scandal? It surely feels like we were just let in on some deep, dark family secret from what we're seeing, and that this has been widespread and been going on for some time. And then you have to ask the question, our beloved America, is it actually a banana republic of America? Well, today on the program, my fellow Americans, we're going to discuss this scandal. And the other big scandal that I think a lot of Americans are pretty uptight about is the COVID scandal. We'll talk about that as well here. Joining us on the program today will be Sidney Powell will be here. Bob France, Ilana Friedman. But we'll start the conversation off here with Tony Schaefer. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and a CIA-trained intelligence operations officer with 35 years of experience in global and national security. We look at all of this, Tony, and you know, I've labeled this thing pretty extreme, actually, the United Banana Republic of America. But when you look at what's being called out here and the accusations that are being put forth with this scandal, this isn't any casual sort of scandal. This is, if this is what it is, and I want to start there with you, what's your sense about this? What have you discovered? And how big are we talking here, Tony?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's huge. I think you mentioned you're going to have Sidney Powell, and I think Sidney is too conservative in her estimate of the scope. This has been an all decks on hand event for the Democrats starting 4 years ago. The playbook they used is hidden in plain sight. It's called The Citizen's Guide to Defeat Donald Trump by David Plouffe, President Obama's campaign guy, manager from, I think, the first go around. And it lays out exactly what they were going to do. They talked about going and using Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Detroit as strongholds to essentially up in the boat. They invested money in those precincts. They did everything they could to, I would argue, and I'm saying this as with, you know, all due caution, they set up those centers for purposes of trying to stuff ballots into the ballot box process. And I think we're gonna see a lot of that. And while Sidney talks about the electronic thing, remember, there's going to have to be a physical component of this somewhere, that somewhere there were ballots put into the system and counted. So I think that while Sidney talks about the software, there's a hardware component, a real artifact component that's going to have to be brought out. And I'm confident that evidence is well underway to be produced.
I think a lot of people are wondering, how long has this been going on? You mentioned the Obama administration back to the first term, but from what we're seeing, this has been building for some time, Tony. This didn't just happen this election here. So I started to question, why now? Why did they unleash all of this at this moment? And I guess the reason for that is that they assess things pretty well and realize that Donald Trump had a bit of a love affair with the American people. And they realized, I think, where this election was going. And it seems to be, Tony, they pulled out all the levers of power now to make this happen. Does anybody really think that Joe Biden got 80 million votes?
I don't know of anybody, especially when you look at the statistical anomalies. If you just run the numbers, there's just no way. And again, I think every congressional race the Republicans ran, we won. There's like, how is that possible? The down ballot, everything went the Republicans' way, but at the top it didn't. And so, again, this goes back to my comment regarding artifacts. I'm confident, based on my understanding of the current set of investigations, and I'm speaking in the plural, there's a number of investigations now ongoing, mm-hmm. examining the very thing you just talked about. This, and my belief is their objective is to win, not fairly, not by the Constitution, but to win, and to win, if necessary, by cheating. And I'm going on the record with you. I forecast that when this is all said and done, no one will ever believe the Democrat Party ever again, based on what I believe had to occur to achieve the numbers that we now see that are supposedly part of the Biden mm-hmm. Campaign's victory.
Well, I mentioned up front, Tony, it's like we were just let in really on some deep, dark family secret somehow. Yeah. You know, like this has been going on in the Republic for how long now? And what are the results? Now, you mentioned down ballots there and all of that. I mean, there are so many components to this. Actually, it's easy to get lost and it's hard to follow for most everybody.
Right.
Because there are it's like what I am suggesting, Tony. It seems to me like they took out a lot of insurance policies. Like you mentioned, the cyber is one aspect of it, but then there are all these other elements. There's even fractionalized voting, GEMs that they've used. We talk about that on the platform here as well. And there seems to be a lot of ways. What I'm really wondering is, how do you think for so long they tried to pull this off and actually got away with quite a bit of it? I mean, I'm hearing reports that other races passed were changed and illegally victorious when they shouldn't have been. You have to think back, how much did this really change? And how do you think they got away with it for so long? I mean, usually with something so widespread like this, it comes out of the woodwork somewhere. What do you think?
Well, I think they tried it in 16. I think that's why Hillary was so shocked on election night, because I would argue that even that night, the Trump victory was so overwhelming that their cheating mechanisms were not capable of handling it. And I would argue that's what happened again in 2020. That I think they've been doing this for a while. They've perfected it. They've used a spectrum of technology, of outreach and money mm-hmm. to create favorable conditions, which are not discernible to the untrained eye. And in this case, I would argue a combination of hardware, software. That is to say that there's certain programs, I believe, and I've talked to some of the developers of this technology at NSA, these programs are designed to permit your candidate, in this case Biden, to basically be assured of about a 3% victory as long as the vote continues in a certain mm-hmm. organic direction. But the moment that organic direction is broken, the cheating software cannot cheat without being detected. So it shuts down. You have to put things into the system. And I would argue the patterns we've seen on election night fit that.
Right. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. Aren't we seeing that? I mean, election night, there was sort of a moment where it kind of, and it's really eerie because it all sort of froze in a lot of different markets. And then we all kind of went to sleep, or a lot of us tried to get a couple hours. And then we wake up and everything started turning a different direction, didn't it?
It did. So I really encourage your audience to just go look for yourself. One of the baselines we've been using is the Florida vote. It's on the New York Times website. My team's actually verifying the data through the state web sources, but we're going to go through it. But if you want to see like the best organic results, look at mm-hmm. the Florida results. It's flat. It's organic. A horizontal line. There's no vertical line showing rapid and unexplained changes in numbers. And by the way, Florida did their vote count as votes came in. They were doing a daily tally up.
So why weren't they able to pull Florida off?
Because of the very transparency that Governor DeSantis created. Mm-hmm. As votes were coming in, they were being counted. There was no opportunity for a mass counting of all votes the night of the election. All the early votes were counted. They were tabulated effectively. So there was no ability. I would argue that these states in question held back until election night to count all of these absentee and vote by mail votes for purposes of having the opportunity to cheat. That's the only thing I can say, because Texas and Florida, much larger, much more complex states, were able to handle this on the election night. So you got to ask yourself, why wouldn't these other states handle it? Because they had to create the space and opportunity to put a number of ballots in on election night to change the results. It's exactly what we saw happen overnight.
Yeah. And again, that's just one element of it. There are right. so many other elements of this thing that it stretches the mind here to think it what does. These people were up to. I find we have to sort of pinch ourselves to realize what's going on. Tony, this is not only going to be the demise, and I've been talking about this for months and months and months, well before the election now, the demise of the Democrat Party, because I think they've gone so far out there. They're on the ledge and the edge where is if they take this thing down and they win, they will be victorious for a lot of reasons, and we will no longer be the same. Yet if they don't get away with this, then it really is the end of that party. What happens then? I mean, what do you see happens at that point when that comes out?
So I think, let me answer this very carefully because I have a lot of information that we're working on that I don't want to get too far ahead of. The best way to describe what I think is going to happen is that the investigations I'm aware of are probably going to result in some very, very hard evidence of voter irregularity, which is probably fraudulent. That is to say that I think that fraud is going to be proven. And when that happens, when you contaminate an entire population's vote, say all of one state, that once you can prove that, you now have to take into account what does the state legislature do. The state legislature, by the Constitution, is the body which basically creates the laws that govern the process. So each state is different. So you're going to have to examine what each state's options are when they're presented with this evidence of fraud. I would argue you're not going to have time to legislate the fraud issue all the way to the Supreme Court, especially if you're talking about criminal prosecution. So it's right. going to really come down to the state legislatures. And I think they're going to have to make some really hard choices about vote certification.
So you don't think this gets to the Supreme Court then before December 14th then?
I think it does. I'm just you asked me about the fraud, and so it's two different things. There's evidence of voter irregularities based on differences of how each precinct and some places each right. city was treated. Equal protection. That's right. Equal protection is a different issue. Equal protection is a very very detailed process of showing how some people. Mm-hmm. In some locations, we're given advantage over others. That's not fraud. That's equal protection. And I think there's some very strong arguments which are going to make it to the Supreme Court. I'm simply addressing what I think we're going to find regarding how the results were created and what we're going to come to find.
You mean at the state level there? Yeah, I see.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But again, once this gets to the Supreme Court level, I mean, all bets are off, as I addressed in the opening remarks. Right. That's right. going to be the moment of truth. Do you have any question or quandary at all with the Supreme Court ruling on this thing the way they should?
Well, I don't, you know, I believe the Supreme Court is going to be obligated based on what I know about the differences, the disparate vote process. In Pennsylvania, for example, I know that some of these drop boxes that were presented for early voting were tons of them in the big city. I mean, like one per every, mile. And then in the rural areas, you could barely find them. So that does create an issue regarding access to voting.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying too is, to me, Tony, that's going to be a moment of truth with the Supreme Court, because here's what I'm thinking. A lot of these rulings come out of the court, you know, it's not unusual at all to have a 5-4 or a 6-3 ruling of some sort, and it's very common. Now it's going to be a moment of truth where the court, as I've suggested so many times, it's so politicized. But at this point here, we're going to really get, I mean, to me, that's where the proof in is all of this, if we really are a banana republic or if we have any truth left in our system.
Well, obviously, you know, the Supreme Court's going to have to rule on the Constitution and the law. So this is where I think there's going to be a number of instances where governors and other legislative, other individuals, not of the legislature court, for example, in Pennsylvania, is going to be held to account. And I do believe the Supreme Court is going to come down on the side of the Constitution and demand accountability. Everything that's been was set up to create positive conditions for Joe Biden and his supporters and his voters. They did nothing to help create conditions for everybody to vote fairly. This is all about trying to create advantage by Democrat-run states, by Democrat governors and Supreme Courts, trying to create conditions for a victory, not fair voting.
All right, let me play this quick audio for you, and I want you to tell me what you get out of this. What was Joe Biden referencing here?
Secondly, we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
So you hear that, Tony, when you talk about the most extensive voter fraud organization in history here. Was that a moment of lapse? Was he getting to the truth here? Or what did you take out of those statements from Joe Biden?
Joe Biden spoke the absolute and correct truth about what he knew. I believe that this cheat was known all the way to the leadership. I think once the American people understand the scope and methodology, they will understand that he did know. And most importantly, I think because this is a twofer. This shows Joe Biden's inability to actually focus properly on what he's being told, because I think he was told that and then inadvertently said it. But
when you have a dementia kind of problem, you oftentimes say things that you shouldn't, that might very well be true.
Spontaneous utterance. And yes,
spontaneous utterance. That's it.
And that's correct. So, I would ask you and your audience to be patient. People are working on this. I know certain people in the media are demanding things, which really, unfortunately, investigating things takes time. And again, once everything is out, people will understand why the time was taken. But it's coming.
All right. So what, if any, talk to me about the involvement. What are your feelings about the Department of Justice, the FBI, Homeland Security? Where are they in all of this, Tony?
So it's a tapestry of involvement. There's some U.S. attorneys who are very much wanting to work. Some are kind of reluctant to work. I was just dealing with this about 5 minutes ago, where one attorney won't do anything unless he's tasked specifically from Washington. It's totally insane. So I think in many instances, a lot of the investigations are partnering with local law enforcement who really do have jurisdiction on some of these things. So there's no clear direction. And I'm sorely disappointed in the FBI and DOJ. They'll go out and instantly investigate a piece of rope that looks like a noose, but man, you can't get them off their butts to do anything when it actually comes to fraud and elections. It's quite stunning.
What about foreign countries, adversaries, and others, even allies for that matter? How deep does this involvement go globally?
So I do believe the Chinese took a side, and that side was with Joe Biden. And while I don't think they physically jumped in to do any real meddling in the election, I think their meddling was much more behind the scenes with money, paying for things. And I think I know there is at least one federal agency that's going to be looking. The agency is going to be looking into that, and I think that's going to take some time. But I think we're going to find the Chinese put a lot of money into this election.
Yeah, I would imagine there are a lot of leaders, world leaders around the world, that are snickering right now to see what's going on in America. I mean, they must be rolling over on this thing. We put out this thing that we are the light of liberty around the globe. It really is a scar on our nation, Tony. I mean, beyond anything we could imagine.
Well, I think the issue really is more about the fact that we've seen this coming. We did not do much to prepare. I'm very disappointed in a lot of folks who really didn't do as much as I think they should have regarding being prepared for what we're now seeing. With that said, it's our job to get to the truth. A lot of us have devoted our lives as intelligence officers and investigative professionals to figuring things out. So this is a big caper, but we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Well, when you say we're going to get to the bottom of it, too, how different are we, Tony, than a banana republic?
That's a great question. And at this point, if the Democrats get their way, we are going to be a banana republic. This is a very grave point in our history, that the republic is republic is teetering, because they've said they want to tear down the Constitution. They want to decriminalize crime. They want to take our guns. They want to do all these extraordinarily wild socialist things. Mm-hmm. And one of them is to get rid of the Electoral College. They want to pack the Supreme Court. These are all things which will not result in a full or successful society moving forward and prosper. it will result in devastation and pain.
Well, it sounds to me like this is about just about as a complete takeover of the Republic in so many ways here that we're speaking about. Pretty incredible here. Big thank you to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer here. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. As we continue to talk to you about the United Banana Republic of America here, joining me on the program now is a great political voice and a news talk guy, Bob Frantz. Bob is the morning news talk host at WHKAM 1420 in Cleveland with the Salem Media Group. And Bob, it's good to have you and get your voice in the mix here. We have not spoke about this, so I'm very curious to get your thoughts on what we're experiencing right now. You know, it's being referenced as widespread fraud. There are a lot of cases bubbling up to the surface here of these. There are so many different levels of fraud that have taken place here in 2020. What is your sense? What is your feelings on it? What are you hearing out there from your part of the world?
Well, first of all, you're right. We haven't spoken since a couple of weeks before the election. So I'm glad to be able to catch up with you now and talk about this in what is kind of the aftermath. But I don't think it is the aftermath of the election. I think the election is still ongoing. The fraud that has taken place, there's two kinds of fraud. You know this. There's voter fraud and there's election fraud. They're different, but both of them have occurred here. There are countless examples, sworn affidavits of people talking about voter fraud. There is tons of evidence of people casting votes in the name of dead people, some of them from the 19th century. There are tons of examples of people in the elections offices not verifying signatures and matching up signatures on absentee or mail-in ballots to voter roll signatures. Those are individual examples of voter fraud. There's evidence and eyewitness whistleblower testimony of poll workers going over and guiding people, helping them decide to whom or for whom to vote. Those are examples of individual voter fraud. But then there's the election fraud, which is the full-on systemic attack on the electoral system. And I know you're talking to Sidney Powell, and she has been just, you know, a lightning rod now for this entire thing, because she and Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, all part of the president's legal team, have been alleging, you know, that the entire thing, because of the software that was used, that the entire election was fraudulent. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to prove that. But the thing I want to say, Malcolm, and that I've been saying on my program is Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, none of them have a duty to present the evidence that they have to the media. They have no responsibility whatsoever to try this case in front of an impartial jury, which is what I would call broadcast media and the print media, and for, you know, the public opinion. That's not what it's for. When a prosecutor reveals an indictment against a murder suspect, he doesn't give all of the evidence that he's going to present to the jury and to the judge in a press conference to the media. Sidney, you know, and I'm tired. I apologize for the passion here, but I'm really tired of people saying, including people who used to be a little bit more fair and neutral and, you know, would give conservatives the benefit of some doubt, Fox News. But I'm tired of the Trump's legal team once again alleged without evidence X, Y, Z. Well, they don't have to present the evidence to you. The idea is that they are just going to tell you what they are going to do, and the evidence will come out before a judge. And that's what Sidney Powell is waiting for. She is waiting for the opportunity to present this as it gets prepared in a court of law, not in a court of CNN. So I'm very frustrated with the way the negativity toward the Trump legal team, because they haven't released chapter and verse of what
they
say.
Well, Bob, to your point there now, and I've been thinking about this, and I've actually had a lot of inquiries about it, and some people are actually saying they're saying too much out in the public space right now. And in fact, that's part of the question is, I'm guessing it's to build up public support to know that something else has really gone on here. But at the same time, Bob, what's your sense of the danger that they are tipping the hands of the perpetrators by putting that out there? What's your sense of that?
Well, I think they have to say something, because if they don't say something and continue to at least give a little bit of information to the public and to the media that this isn't settled, you know, that we don't have an office of president-elect, I think people are going to settle into the Biden and Harris.
Well, they're already doing that. Well, so you don't have any qualms then with the fact that the criminal intent here, the people who've pulled, we're talking something massive we've never seen or had happen before to us at all. It would make us no longer a representative republic, for sure. It's a nail in the whole process here and an embarrassment to our global community, for sure. But your sense is then, don't you think there's a bit of a danger without having that evidence and right up there with the court, you know, or that balance, I'm saying here, Bob, because they're going to cover their tracks. I mean, these people are not dumb. They're not stupid. Or are they? I guess you see where I'm at.
I do. I don't think they're tipping their hand, really. I think they're threading a needle here. Right. And it's very hard to do. But I think they need to, you know, there has to be an explanation as to why there hasn't been a transition of power put in place yet or underway, why Trump hasn't conceded yet. I think they can't just allow people to say Trump isn't conceding because he is a narcissistic, power mad dictator who doesn't.
Well, but they are saying that. They are saying that.
Well, they are. But I think what mitigates that a little bit, though, Malcolm, is having some of the legal team say, look, we have very good reasons why this is still in doubt. We're going to give you a thumbnail sketch. We're going to give what Jenna Ellis said on Thursday. It was an opening statement, but we're not going to present to you our entire case.
Yeah.
Because if they did that, then I think what you're talking about,
exactly,
the people covering their tracks would be much more great.
You are. I really like the fact that you are reminding people right now, and this is so important. You know, we see how on the 3rd of November, Bob, the media played a king, and they kinged the president-elect and went right to that court, which is, of course, all goes to the gameplay where they've been, you know, trying all these attempts to remove Trump from the field, from the playing field, clearly over 4 years now, and they never accepted his election in 2016. And you say, well, but they, and you're right when you say, it's a great reminder to all of us. And for those who are saying, well, why aren't they producing all the evidence yet? Why aren't they giving the media? Well, the media, they're not the final say. They have no say in this thing, actually. They're supposed to only report what happens, not make it up, Bob. You bring up a great point, buddy.
Yeah, well, you know, Jenna did that on Thursday after Rudy spoke and Sidney spoke. She said, look, you know, you guys are literally an unfair, or excuse me, you would be a biased jury. She said, none of you have obviously ever covered courtrooms or trials, any of the journalists in the room, because if you did, you would know what the jury or what the jury selection process looks like and what the evidence presentation looks like. And none of you would ever be on any jury because you're also biased. And I totally agree with that. Why present information that is going to be very vital to the case in a court of law? Why present? You mentioned it a moment ago, Malcolm, when you talked about, are they tipping their hand too much and allowing the perpetrators of this massive fraud to learn what they know and cover their tracks? Well, for goodness sakes, give the media any of the actual evidence here, and they will go out of their way to make sure the perpetrators don't have to cover their tracks. That's when they will do their investigations. The media, which is supposed to investigate allegations of fraud and crime, which they used to do back in a bygone era when the Fourth Estate meant something, the media would do the opposite. They would say, here's what Trump's team says they have. Let's dig and prove it wrong. So it's you know, they're in almost a lose-lose situation. It's a very uphill climb.
Yeah, you and I, the fact that we're in the business, we see a lot of things things and from a journalistic standpoint. And it is alarming. And it's like, Bob, it's like a pylon right now when I talk about what are we really, a representative republic or a banana republic here. It really is sort of a pylon. The insult to injury of this whole thing is, which you and I've been pretty high on the talking post about the Fourth Estate and the media. We've been on them and onto their games for some time now. In this election cycle, it just highlights all of it to a degree we really can't dispute any further. I have an audio I want to play for you now from President Trump. I would like to, let's take a listen back. This is what he said, Bob, at the debate with Joe Biden. And it was kind of a telltale sign of things to come, I believe.
When I listened to Joe talking about a transition, there's been no transition from when I won. I won that election. And if you look at crooked Hillary Clinton, if you look at all of the different people, there was no transition because they came after me trying to do a coup. They came after me spying on my campaign. They started from the day I won and even before I won, from the day I came down the escalator with our first lady. They were a disaster. They were a disgrace to our country. And we've caught them. We've caught them all. We've got it all on tape. We've caught them all. And by the way, you gave the idea for the Logan Act against General Flynn. You better take a look at that because we caught you in a sense. And President Obama was sitting in the office. He knew about it, too. So don't tell me about a free transition. As far as the ballots are concerned, it's a disaster. A solicited ballot, okay, solicited is okay. You're soliciting. You're asking. They send it back. You send it back. I did that. If you have an unsolicited, they're sending millions of ballots all over the country. There's fraud. They found them in creeks. They found some with the name Trump. Just happened to have the name Trump just the other day in a waste paper basket. They're being sent all over the place. They sent two in a Democrat area. They sent out 1,000 ballots. Everybody got two ballots. This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen.
Those words will live in infamy right there, fraud like you've never seen before. And the president, in some ways, this was before the early voting had already started. And he pointed out some of those cases there, Bob. But I'm wondering, as we look back at that recording now from the president at the debate, part of it is a bit prophetic. I mean, he must have had some inclination beside the normal fraud. Because we're talking such a widespread fraud, I wonder how much the president knows. Because, Bob, as I've talked earlier in the program, we've got, you know, where's the FBI, the DOJ, the Homeland Security? Where are these people in any of this, number one? How far and why does this criminal intent go? And what do you think the president knew prior to this moment based on that recording?
You know, it's not a matter of what he knew was going to happen, what fraud was in place. But I think he suspected, like many of us did, what could happen. And when you have the playing field as uneven as it was going in, I think he just wanted everybody to know. And Malcolm, what he said about the transition from 2016 was spot on. Thanks. You know, the Democrats didn't just say, OK, let's have a peaceful transition from Obama to Trump and let's work with the new administration. And in fact, you know, the Democrats and the media, and that is repetitive, I know that's redundant because they literally are one and the same. But here is the example I like to remind people about that. The headline on the Washington Post website on January 20th of 2017, Malcolm, you recall what it said? The headline on the Washington Post was "The impeachment of Donald Trump begins now."
That's right.
Literally on the day of his inauguration, right. Accept his victory. Yeah. They called his victory fraudulent, saying that Russia contributed to it. We all know what happened with the 2.5 years and the tens of millions of dollars wasted in that hoax. So Donald Trump has a track record here of seeing what he's been up against and the length to which they will go to stop him from his first go round and from his 4 years in office. So, of course, he was going to have a very strong suspicion of what they would try to do to stop him from winning re-election. And everything you heard in that soundbite, I think, was born of that. Did he have a specific knowledge that Dominion would be used? Did he have a specific knowledge that poll watchers would be ejected from counting rooms if they're Republican? No, he probably didn't know all of the specifics, but he knew. You probably have seen the same CNN video screens that I have in Pennsylvania, where it shows President Trump leading Joe Biden by X number of votes in 1 second. And then they cycle through the states that have been called at that point in time. I think they went from Pennsylvania, then back to the beginning. I want to say it was to Arizona or whatever, but about 3 minutes apart. You know, CNN has the vote totals up there. Now, 3 minutes after one vote total, one can only expect the vote totals for both candidates to go up. because more votes are being counted. So obviously there are votes for the candidates. But 3 minutes later, on the same CNN screen, uninterrupted, it showed Donald Trump with 20,000 fewer votes than he had 3 minutes ago. Yeah. Not 20,000, by the way, in a round number, but a specific number. And Joe Biden's total went up by that very same amount in that 3 minute period. And that cannot happen. It is impossible to happen if you are counting votes for that 3 minutes and reporting more votes coming in. Right. There's no way can you just start striking votes off of one person's total. So all of that stuff, I think, is evidence enough for me to think that Sidney Powell is not putting her career, her reputation, and her name, you know, for the annals of history on the line for no good reason. I think her Dominion software, yeah, vote changing allegations, I think we have seen evidence, yeah, of that on video ourselves.
I want to talk to you for a moment here about COVID. I know it seems to be understated right now as far as when it comes to stories right now in our country, Bob, there is no bigger story than the election and the Republic being stolen right now. I mean, COVID almost goes out the window as almost irrelevant to this master big story that it really controls everything. It controls everything. We're all sort of stunned right now. It's like we're in a froze moment from the 3rd of November, almost like we went to bed that night and everything froze, as you just said, and we woke up the next day. It's almost like we're in this state of limbo here in our nation. But the one thing is not, as a lot of these mayors and governors that are asking people not to celebrate the holidays, don't celebrate at all, no Thanksgiving, no nothing for you. And the mandates I'm seeing are unbelievable. One of the pieces in my news feed, Bob, said, why even a small Thanksgiving is dangerous. Now, that was on 538, of course, the ridiculous people from ABC there. What do you take of these unimaginable restrictions that actually Justice Alito talked about just about a week and a half ago, actually, that are being stripped from Americans? Pretty bad stuff.
Well, before I answer that, Malcolm, I want to tie the two together.
Exactly.
You talk about the election story and the COVID story, because in my mind, aside from the software allegations of that kind of vote switching or vote flipping, I think without COVID-19, I think President Trump wins this election going away.
Oh, million percent.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why all of these states sent out unsolicited live ballots to everybody on their voter rolls and their pets. Which led to the opportunity for ballot fraud, which, again, remember, there's voter fraud and ballot fraud, and then there's election fraud. So without COVID, they wouldn't have had the opportunity to commit all of the mail fraud that they did in that regard. But now, as to your real question here about the restrictions, I mean, look, I think the worst one I've seen was from the state of Washington, where Jay Inslee said, in addition to other lockdown restrictions, they said you cannot have people over to your house if they don't live there, unless they have quarantined for 14 days before coming to visit you. You cannot host a gathering, another couple, another family, even if it's your family, but they live in another place, they have to quarantine for 14 days, whether they have symptoms, whether there's any suspicion of sickness or not. We are seeing our rights being taken away from us little by little. We are the proverbial frog right now resting comfortably in the warm water. This is nice. This feels really great. Until a couple of days later, boy, it's getting awfully warm. This water's a little warmer. And a few days after that, we realize we're dead because we didn't stop it in time. The water boiled and we got killed. They are taking literally every constitutional right upon which this great republic was founded, and they are chipping away at them. You can't be out after 10 o'clock. I'm an Ohioan. Mike DeWine, the governor here, has decreed from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. it's a no-go time. You have to be home. You have to be on curfew. When you are allowed out, you can only go here in so many numbers. We are going to put a cap on that, et cetera, et cetera. And Malcolm, I'm just going to make a statement that a lot of people have made. I'm not being, reinventing the wheel here. The Constitution of the United States, our rights guaranteed us by God and codified in the Constitution of the United States, they are not suspended in the event of a pandemic. They are not suspended in the event of a health crisis. The freedom guaranteed us in the Constitution isn't just for during times of peace and comfort and prosperity. The reason those protections have to be written in is so they can't be taken away from us in a time of calamity. We absolutely have to push back in every state against every restriction. And I'll tell you something else, and I apologize for the long soliloquy here, but Malcolm, I'll tell you something else. This nationwide mask mandate that Joe Biden promised to put into place if he takes office, and we know he can't do it on his own, he's going to have to get a commitment from the governors to do it, is one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever heard. 2 points for you. One, a Danish study that was conducted of around 6,000 people, massive, large, randomized study of people wearing masks and not wearing masks. The difference between the mask wearers, half of them wore them, half of them did not, was 1/3 of 1% in terms of people being infected. The masks stopped nothing. And then the second thing I'll say is here in the state of Ohio, Mike DeWine put his mask mandate in play on July 23rd. Since that time, he has praised Ohioans at having complied with it to the tune of 85 to 95%, which is phenomenal. You get 85% of 11 million people to do something. That's incredible compliance, right? Well, if 85 to 95% of Ohioans are wearing masks, how and why is there this massive spike that is leading to curfews and new restrictions? Clearly, the mask mandate does not work. And so, like I said, I know I'm in a lot of different places here, Malcolm, but I'm
the nature of it. What you're indicating right now to listeners is that the Republicans are as bad as the Democrats, and they are. I mean, they clearly are in a lot of markets, in a lot of areas, Bob. You know, they are. Listen, just
not all of them, obviously, just the Republicans.
No, but there's a good lot of them.
There's
a good many of them that are thinking that way, actually. So, it's not inclusive, but listen, you see, Justice Samuel Alito, I mentioned moments ago here, he said the COVID crisis has served as sort of a constitutional stress test, as were his words, just about a week and a half ago, Bob. Well, that tells you everything right there. And he calls it lawmaking by executive fiat, you see. I mean, he came right out and dissed the whole thing. Except to the federal. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I talked about this about a week ago, and he did it with the Federalist Society. And, you know, for a Supreme Court justice to come out like that and make those kinds of comments is not typical. It's very unusual for someone like that to make that stand. And he did that. But it tells you what's happening. So having said all that, Bob, and the final thought here is this. You know, reluctantly, I labeled today's program the United Banana Republic of America. Very reluctantly, because it saddens me to a degree I can't even possibly put into words right now. But when we're talking about these two things here, we're talking about the election and the fraud and the COVID and the fraud. I think that we are past now the point of the monopoly game where we can collect anything. And I think that I am... as an optimist, I'm having some real troubles here trying to find the right moment to say, hey, everything's going to be fine, my fellow Americans. I think we're in a heap of trouble, Bob France.
Well, the people need two things. They need representation, and they haven't gotten it. You're right in what Samuel Alito said. We are being, oppressed by a tyrannical government, both at the federal level and at the state level. And our legislatures, who are supposed to be our representatives, have not been given any say. I know that for a fact here in Ohio, because they passed bills limiting the governor's power to do the things he has done, and he has vetoed them and ignored them. Lawsuits have been brought, and judges have ruled these orders to be unconstitutional, and he has said, I'm going to appeal, and thus, until they be served by the highest court, I'm going to ignore those. So that's one thing. We need our representation. We need our true three branches of government to all have a say here. And then the second thing we need to do, quite frankly, we have to do for ourselves. And I'm not calling for any, they accused Scott Atlas, Dr. Atlas, of calling for violence when he said rise up in defiance of these orders. But I'm saying we need, this is a time for civil disobedience. Restaurants, gyms, bars, stores, you name it, if they have been given orders for you to close because of a health emergency, saying you no longer have the freedom to operate your business and people don't have a freedom to shop, they need to unite together and say no. They need to open their doors, and the patrons need to flood the stores and support them. If one or two people, Malcolm, try to defy a governmental order, the government will bring the weight of God upon them. But if 1,000 to 2,000 people and businesses combine and say, we are going to remain free as we always have, it is not our jobs to see who gets sick and who does not. It's our jobs to open up our stores and businesses and keep our people working and keep our economy going. It's time for civil disobedience.
Yeah. Well, Malcolm, you're starting to see that in some of these markets. You're seeing some of the business owners of restaurants and gyms and others and salons, and they're starting to kick back, say, you know what, we're not going to close no matter what the governor says. And I'm hearing that in a lot of states, actually. And so back to Scott Atlas, when he says rise, that really is what we're talking about by rise, and it's taking your rights back now. And I will say this to you, as I say big thank you here to Bob France here, and it's this. You know, sometimes, my fellow Americans, there is that moment of confrontation. We've seen that before in our republic. So I will say for the record here, we are headed somewhere. I don't know what exactly that confrontational moment looks like, but from what I can see from all levers here of government and all levers of our liberties here, we are headed toward a confrontational moment to the likes we haven't seen in our nation. And I say that respectfully, but I say it just the same. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, as you heard at the top of the program, we had the lead counsel with President Trump on, Sidney Powell, scheduled to be on the program today. And although she was confirmed for the program, something has transpired in her schedule. And let me read to you exactly what has transpired between her and I so that you know. As she says to me in here with her message, my day has changed very suddenly with new developments. Now, that's important. I mentioned that to you. That is part of the message she has sent me that she was recording here with us, scheduled to be on the program. You know, I responded back, and part of the message, I have been praying for Sidney Powell and praying for Rudy Giuliani and praying for all of the people that are on the president's team there and all that are trying to get to the point of truth here. And, you know, as I said to Sidney Powell in my message back to her, bless you. I know you have the weight of the nation and the world on your shoulders. And may God continue to bless you and watch over you, Sidney. And we went on to say some other things in the message, but I wanted you to get the sense of that. Now, she will be with us next week on the program. And so I, you know, there was no need to go back and fix any of this. I wanted you to hear authentically what had happened. And it's important. And listen, we know these things. They're breaking news developments. We know these things happen. And we know the weight that these people are carrying for our great nation. So listen, I truly understand. And it is perfectly understandable here. So let's continue on here now. And as I also said at the top of the program, that would be with me is Ilana Friedman. And Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator and host here. Ilana is, we say an intelligence analyst, she's a researcher. She gets into whatever the throes of that conversation is, and whether it's domestic or whether it's international or whatever it might be in some sort of crisis situation. And so let me say that up front here. I want to talk specifically, make people aware of this, educate them, if you will, of this process that is called fractionalizing votes. And it's from a company called GEMS, I understand, Global Election Management System. And you have a terrific article, op-ed up on the platform, The Most Explosive and Comprehensive Voter Fraud Scandal in American History. And so I want to give you the floor of that and explain to listeners here what fractionalizing votes is, what the danger is in all of this, and what's transpired, please.
Thank you, Malcolm. There's a company out there called GEMS, G-E-M-S, and it specializes in something that we've really never heard about before. The massive voter fraud that has emerged from the 2020 election was never meant to be discovered. It was always going to be secret. And most scandals start out that way. But what this GEMS does, we've heard about now, finally, some of this stuff has come out. And we've heard about, for example, how there's one program out there, and we can talk about it later. But right now, there's one program out there that flips blue, red votes to blue. And as you cast your vote, or after your vote is already cast and it's being transferred from one place to another, a percentage of red votes become blue votes. And that has nothing to do with the way you voted. It has to do with what transpired electronically, because it was designed to do that. But this company, GEMS, does something else. It fractionizes votes. That means it takes your vote, which is one vote, one person, and it creates, instead of one vote, one person, it assigns a fraction to you. Now, in this situation, if you are a Republican voting and you have cast your vote for President Trump, it will assign a value to your vote of, say, 0.75, which is 3/4 of a vote. But if you were a Democrat voting for Joe Biden, it might assign your vote the value of 1.25, or 1 1/4 vote. So in other words, when you accumulate thousands of votes and they are fractionized, then what you have is a very unbalanced voting. You no longer have one voter, one person, one vote. You have one person 3/4 of a vote and another person a vote and a quarter. He's taken a quarter of your vote, that person.
There were reports that, as I understand, where there were certain markets where there were more votes than there were registered voters. Heard that quite a bit, actually, in different areas. Would this be one of the reasons why?
It might be, but there are other reasons as well. For example, it's quite well known that, for example, in Nevada, mm-hmm. there was more than 100. It's usually when they consider how many people actually come and vote, the average is something about 67% of registered voters actually go and vote at a presidential election. And in Nevada, more than 100% of the registered voters voted. And I don't think it's because of the, it could be. But I think that's been going on for a long time, long before these.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, to me, this is all pre-programming the system. I would think whoever's doing this, if they got lost with, there's a lot of moving pieces here. I would think then you could have these upside down races or situations where too many were plugged one way versus too many the others not the other way. And then I think you would end up with these disproportionate situations. How do we know? Does that make sense, number one? And number two, how do we know this fractionalized voting is really happening, Ilana?
Well, this is difficult, and I'm not a technology expert, so I can't tell you specifically about how this is done technologically. However, what I do think is built into the system, and this goes back to answer your earlier question, I think they build in it. It's not universal. For example, they don't say all Republican votes have a value of 3/4 of a vote. They don't say that all Democrat votes have a 1.25 value as a vote. But what they do is they'll say a certain percentage of Republican votes will be valued this way. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they they avoid the problem that you're talking about of having more votes than they have.
So it's all pre-programmed in their minds. In other words, whoever's doing this, right? And sort of like whatever the end game is going to be, that's what they figure out, right?
You know, one of the things that I have been considering as I've been going through all this stuff, this is a terrible situation. It's abominable. I mean, it is so bad. But one of the things that occurred to me, do you remember way back last February, the Iowa caucus was the very first primary contest? And it's fairly simple. Iowa is a small market. I mean, it's not a state with, I think the population of Iowa is something about 3 million people altogether for the entire state.
Wow.
And the Democrats did not come out in force, but they could not figure out the final vote. It didn't come out that night. It didn't come out the next day. It took weeks before they figured out who won, who came next, and so forth. There were a lot of candidates.
In fact, it became a national laughing stock, is what it became, Ilana. People were laughing about it. Like, why? They can't even count the votes in a lot. And it kind of was an embarrassment egg on the face for the DNC, as I recall.
Well, you know, if you consider that maybe they were fractionizing votes, and the people who are counting the votes, you're not supposed to see them, but maybe it got it, you know, maybe it was in trial and it got screwed up and they couldn't figure out where these votes were coming from and what's a 3/4 of a vote, you know, and it wouldn't be Republicans and Democrats. It was only Democrats, but there were lots of them. I remember at one point there were 20, I don't know how many there were during the Iowa caucus, but at one point there were 27 candidates. Running for president within the Democrat Party. So I'm suspecting that there was some very nefarious activity going on in the software, and that's why they couldn't figure it out. And it could very well have been fractionizing votes, or it could have been flipping votes, or it could have been anything, and we just don't know. But I suspect that it had to do with what was wrong with the software and why they couldn't figure it out.
Right. And it could be. Guess. I remember nobody had an answer for that. So your suspicions are probably well-grounded to bring the point up, because there was never an answer as to why that all happened. And it did go on for weeks and weeks, and it became a bit of a late night joke with the whole deal as to what's going on in Iowa, that they couldn't actually do that. So your point is well taken. That piece, remind folks, it's a really terrific read, the most explosive and comprehensive voter fraud scandal in American history. I'll recommend you go read that on AmericaOutloud.com that Ilana put forth here. What really is a shocker to me is how they got away with this over a period of elections. It's now come out from multiple sources that these things have happened through a period of elections. This wasn't the first election that this has happened. And it's amazing to me that they've been able to keep this so below the radar, Ilana, before this moment of time, where they obviously get so much out of the box here now that there's no way they're going to be able to put this rabbit back in. What's your quick point to that assessment?
It looks to me very much like the power brokers have decided who our president will be. And it's not we the people, the way our Constitution guarantees. And if that's the case, and we are not able to stop it as we have to, then this is no longer the America that we have known and loved, Malcolm. We have already become a third world country. So we have a lot of work to do.
That's exactly it, Ilana Friedman. And that's exactly why this program here, as much as it pained me, was the United Banana Republic of America. And we've got some real damage here in the Republic to fix here. There's no doubt of that, no question in my mind here. My fellow Americans, I've given you a lot to think about here. The next hour, Michael Johns will be on with me in Viewpoint Presents, and you'll hear a lot of passion on this program. I guarantee you that. I hope you'll stay with us for that. We're all on this here at America Out Loud. We will continue to dig deep as we can and find out what that truth is and continue to bring it to you. We're doing everything we can here. Believe me, we love our country as much as you love our country here. And it's all hands on deck at this point. I would look forward to having Sidney Powell on again next time here on Viewpoint. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.